So we'll start this out in 3, 2.
Hi, we are
Peter,
Jenny,
and Jamie
from Strange Fruit,
and you're listening to Comic Pop Library.
To Comic Pop License to Read, brought to you by Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard, along with
Jonathan
and Logan.
And today we are going to be talking about Realm of Magic series. Seeker of Magic is book one of that series, written by Suzanne Lambden. It was published in the beginning part of 2017. There's also a second book, but guess what, folks? We have a special guest with us to talk along with us and give us some news about some other things. The author herself, Suzanne Lambden. So, Suzanne, thank you for coming on again.
Hey, where's the fake canned laughter or the cheers? It's like, yay!
Yay, Suzanne! Woo!
I'm here.
War,
does that
podcast
work for you?
That does work for me.
All right, awesome. There you go.
Hey, you know, Richard, before you even ask me a question, I'm going to tell you a funny story about Fox Stalker Con from last weekend.
Okay.
About Realm of Magic.
Okay.
So I have The Seeker of Magic and the second book, Mistress of Magic, on the corner, so when everybody walks by, they can see the raven, they can see the covers of the books, and suddenly a gal spots it, she stops. She comes walking back, and she looks at the book, and she goes, I'm Wiccan. Are you Wiccan? This book is all about magic, and I'm going to buy it. And so, of course, I say, yeah, I'm Wiccan, and you should buy the book, and she bought both. But it made me laugh, right? Because she just was walking on by, and she saw the word magic, she saw the raven, and it just reeled her right on in.
Cool. That's neat.
So, that's magical.
It was a really neat cover on the first cover. I really enjoyed that. And it kind of leaves that mystery of what the characters look like, because the second cover has Taliesin.
Right.
And we'll leave it at that, and we can get into other things if you want to later. But so it was kind of nice to see a generic cover, but yet it was interesting enough that, like you said, it would draw people in.
Right. The cover to Mistress of Magic, it actually had a werewolf on it.
Okay.
I wanted to have, because of this series, right, it's about three clans, the Raven mm-hmm. clan, the Wolf clan, and the Eagle clan, and what they're doing in the medieval kingdom. And so I had wanted to go with book covers, right, with the three animals.
Okay.
Which, by the way, are very important in Roman mythology, which is one of the reasons why I picked them, those three animals. But then my publisher thought, well, you know, people really like people on the front of the cover. So he thought the werewolf and what it was doing was too scary. And maybe I wouldn't want that on a fantasy novel, though it looked really, really cool. So then I switched and went with the figure of the gal on the front instead.
I think either way would have worked. I mean, I like the cover that's there, but the wolf cover would have worked too. And it would have tied them all together. Cool.
It was scary looking.
Well, this is one we kind of, last time we talked, you said you had some plans for werewolves or wolfen that it's in here. So you kind of, not necessarily in Immortal Hearts, but you definitely key on this a little bit in the Seeker of Magic series, Realm of Magic series. So, but we'll get into that. But some of the main characters, we're just going to kind of list them off and then jump into here. And Suzanne, you can jump in and correct me when I get it wrong.
I will. It'll be my pleasure.
Okay. Like I said, Taliesin is the lead character. And she has a second name, which we might say, we might not. We'll see what Suzanne wants us to do. We have Grudge. He's another key component of this. And just some of the other characters. It's kind of, it's one of those, the fantasy tropes where there's a little bit of a quest in there. So they have their gang or their fellowship, if you want to go with Lord of the Rings stuff. So, I mean, it's kind of in the true traditional classic fantasy realm. And that's kind of where I felt you were going with this. But you have Rook, Wern, Hawk. That's the first grouping before they get other people along the way. So was that what you were really going for? Was that classical feel?
You know, it is. And I'll tell you, Richard, it's funny. I've been getting some nice book reviews out of England. And at least Secret Magic is being compared to Tolkien, which... Okay. That's like a really big compliment. I don't know if I deserve that, but I'll take it. So, but I was trying to go along those lines. And so, and you know, with my books, I like to use different names, names that you're not familiar with. So they, when you're reading along and the different names pop up, you pay a little bit of attention to it. And at least with the three clans in this series, like with the Raven clan, right, I wanted to use mainly bird names. The species of birds, and I had all these, when I was researching it, I had all these books about birds, and, you know, when you see a raven, it's supposed to, people think it means death, and when you hear a starling singing in the morning, it means the birth of a child, and it had all these really cool omens and how people felt. And of course, when you see a buzzard or a vulture in the sky, you know how you feel about that, but I wanted to keep with the Raven clan and use, like, Taliesin's name's different, of course.
Right.
And so is Grudge. But overall, like Hawk and Wren, even Rook, Osprey, all the names that I used were bird names. So that's what I wanted to really keep with that particular clan of my scavengers.
Okay. And that's basically what the clans are. I wrote them down here, and you can specify more specifically. They are all scavenger type clans, and they have interesting aspects. Some are traditional. Raven clan, they have their set things that they can get off of battlefields or skirmishes or whatever. They can get armor, clothes, jewelry. You mentioned the Wolf clan. They can find survivors, foot soldiers, archers, whatnot. But the Eagle clan, I thought, was really interesting. They have the right to ransom noblemen back to the
to their families. I know.
So I was like, man, that's kind of cruel.
Yeah, the Eagle clan, you know, they really are badass, and they're like they're the upper class. If you think about it in a class structure system, the Eagle clan's your upper class, and they are only going to deal with the nobles and ransing them, and they're also allowed on a battlefield to pick up battle plans or maps or whatnot. They're all about the intrigue and the politics and making money. They would never stoop, of course, to help a wounded guy that's bleeding out. Right. They're not going to stop to get a horse, and they're not going to pick up armor or weapons. They're not interested in these things. They're all about trying to gain control of the throne, keep the king in their back pocket, and know everything about everyone. So that's the Eagle clan. They're just kind of creepy and weird, and I really like them. And, you know, the Wolf clan, in a way, they're kind of slavers.
Right.
Right, because they pick up the survivors that are anybody who is not the upper class off the battlefield. And they are taking them. So, you know, you speak of ransom with the nobles, that they can sell the regular foot soldier, whoever they've got, into slavery, into some of the other outside kingdoms. And the Wolf clan, they're scary.
And you also mentioned they don't necessarily have to be alive either. They can be dead bodies going back to their families too.
Yeah, families want dead bodies. That's terrible. But you want to give them a proper funeral. People still care.
But the whole story centers around the very first battlefield that we're introduced to. And some of the clans are acting strangely, not quite to their proper roles. And that's even including the Eagle clan. So that's where the series kind of gets started. But Taliesin, I got to see if I can find these swords makers. You have Rivlin, Gregors, Flestaff. What was her father's name? I just went blank. It started with a name. Mandrakes.
Mandrake.
So you have all these sword makers. So I'm assuming you kind of key on Mandrake because of what's happening with Taliesin, but I'm assuming the others will come into play too. You kind of mentioned them, and to I guess however long you decide to make this series, if it's a trilogy, I'm sure they'll all come about. But you said you researched all this other stuff, was it the same way with the metallurgy and sword making?
It was. I'll tell you, as a child and even now as an adult, my favorite thing of all things is Camelot.
Okay.
I love King Arthur, and I love Excalibur. And I think I love the sword more than King Arthur. So you could say that the realm of magic, in a way, is an ode or a bow of respect to Excalibur itself. Because in this trilogy, in Realm of Magic, I do spend an awful lot of time dealing with magical weapons.
Right.
And so not just the magical weapons, but, right, the metallurgists, the guys, the swordsmiths, the blacksmiths that are making the magical weapons. And in a kingdom where magic is outlawed, where magical weapons are supposed to be destroyed or at least dormant, and this series really, of course, it's a realm where magic is outlawed, where all magic users have been burned or put to the sword. And yet, a lot of your upper class have kept the magical swords or the magical weapons of their family, and they're still using them, though they shouldn't.
Right.
You know, and the Eagle Clan, of course, is trying to keep track of this and know who has what. And then yet, Taliesin, as you know, has a knack for finding magical weapons on a battlefield when there should not be any magical weapons on a battlefield. And then, frankly, she should not be even to have the ability to find them.
Right.
I really got into the weapons in this. And in a way, the weapons are characters, just as like Taliesin and Grudge and everyone else. The magical weapons are also characters.
And most of them are, when you place it within the magical realm, they become their own, like you said, character or entity of themselves. So that even becomes even more prevalent when you get further into the book with Ringer Ike.
I say Ringer Ike. I don't even know where that even came up. It almost in my mind, I might have been looking into some Norse or German mythology, but it sounded kind of German to me.
Right.
And I bet if someone with a German accent said it would sound really cool. But Ringer Reich is the most powerful sword in the realm, and it's the Raven sword that belongs to the Raven clan. And just wait, when you get into this series and you read about that sword and where it came from, and everything it's been through, it's just as exciting and fun as finding out what's going on with your main character, Taliesin.
And this is one where, like I said, Taliesin is the linchpin for this whole series. And she finds something on the battlefield that the clans are clamoring for, specifically the Eagle Clan. But Wolf Clan comes knocking on the Raven's door to their clan and basically say, we want this back, but they won't say what they're wanting back because, like you mentioned, magic can't be talked about.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, Eagle Clan shows up, says, come with us. But then pretty much Taliesin is sent with Grudge, who there's intricates that I'm skipping over in the story, but he became part of the Black Guard?
Yeah, the Black Wings. The Black Wing Guard.
but he gives that up so he can follow with Taliesin with the quest of following this map to where they're needing to go. So they are on the road, basically, and they come across... And again, this is where it really felt like traditional fantasy. Zarnok, who is the wizard.
Yes, Zarnok. he's a splendid character. He's like a little Gandalf with a sense of humor, and he's weird.
It's true.
I do love Zarnok. He's my comical relief in the story. Yeah.
And he's a lot of fun. It kind of reminds me. Well, this is kind of dating me, but if you want to go that way, with his eccentricities, Disney's Sword in the Stone, how they portrayed Merlin.
Yeah, that's the silly Merlin. Yeah, exactly.
So, but
he's not really dating yourself, since that's exactly what he is.
Okay, but he's a little bit more mature in his levity at some points than the Disney version, put it that way.
It's basically the Disney version without the censor.
Kind of, yes. That is true. But we also go along, we find a band of gypsies, which I think was Jael.
The Qajar. Right. You know, it's however you want to say it, but it's like Qajar.
But Tamal and Jael kind of joined the band at that point, and a couple of Tamal's cousins, I believe it was, or... friends, I can't remember. So you're kind of gathering all this together, and so it's one of those where it's the book is roughly 400-ish pages, but it travels. I mean, you're traveling along with them, and it travels at a good pace. It's not slow. You're not taking time to describe every little stone or flower, you're actually moving it along. Because that's one of the things that I kind of had difficulty with Tolkien. I have difficulty with Louis Lamar when I try to read some of this, or Gray or Stephen King. They get so detailed, but you're a constant travel. You're not staying in one spot and describing every little thing.
So, did she at least not do too many of the retroactively including some things?
What do you mean?
Like when she goes over a scene, finishes that scene, and in the next scene, say something had happened in that scene which didn't happen in that scene.
No, it's pretty much a straight travel through. There's no great, memories there's per se that I understand. So I don't remember you doing a whole lot like that. So
yeah,
in that regards, I enjoy the pacing. It, you know, it was just the right pacing to keep you interested and bring in the new characters that needed to be brought in. And the rest of the books, I'm going to assume, you can tell me if I'm wrong, definitely, it's going to be more of the, they're already introduced, so you don't have to take that time and to introduce all these. But I enjoyed the pacing, how you develop them.
Good. So. In Secret of Magic, I had some gal that did a really wonderful book review after she read it. And she it's really odd. I've never had this happen before. But she had, past life. She recognized okay. things that she thought from her past life. So she was having deja vu. Okay. And it some of the things, like when my main character runs into the gypsies.
Right.
And the kind of, you know, this whole book is really a sword quest. It's a search for the most powerful sword, and it's taking them on a fun adventure through the realm. But this gal identified with a lot of the characters and a lot of the pages, but in a past life way. Hmm. And when she did this book review, and it's on Amazon.com, so if anyone can find it, it's brilliant. She described the book and exactly what's going on, but also did a strange parallel with her own past lives. I've never seen anything like it. I've never had a reader feel so deeply when they read a book. And that, I mean, she felt like the things that were happening had happened to her. And it really, at first I thought, this is really weird and this is freaky. But then when I finished, I thought, this is the coolest damn thing I ever saw. It was really fun. But she really identified and really enjoyed the quest and the journey. Mm-hmm. And like I said, felt like she had been on it. So I'm hoping it's maybe the descriptions that I give, and it's enough to excite you or inflame your own imagination without,
right.
You know, I try to be an author that gives you enough that you can sit there and you can fantasize and imagine what it looks like without telling you exactly what it looks like, you know, with almost kind of boring you and slowing the story down. Yeah. I want to keep a nice fast pace, but not too fast you're lost, but fast enough that you're always moving along.
And I enjoyed that, because that's what I was getting at, because you're not describing every rock and stone. It's because sometimes I get a little bit too bogged down in that from my liking. But yet you give enough of the background, and the characters that you bring in are enough characters and unique in their own way. Of course, some of the stuff we're not going to give too much away, but Taliesin, of course, has the red hair. So you kind of based it off Norse. No, Roman. You kind of mentioned it's kind of based on Roman, but with Taliesin, you kind of get that sense of Celtic with the ire.
Exactly, Ireland. Exactly. She's more like a Boadicea,
okay.
Or Boadica, however you want to say it. One way's the Celt way, one way's the Roman way. I really wanted her just to be, you know, she's adopted by the Raven Clan. She knows who her father was, who's Mandrake, a swordsmith. She doesn't know who her mother is. She can't remember what happened. She knows that her parents are dead.
Right.
She doesn't know how they died. She's adopted by the Raven Clan, who are, you know, battlefield scavengers. And when she turns 26, she finds that she's got this ability to find magical weapons when she shouldn't have it. So you know that there's something magical going on with her. So when I wrote this whole thing, it's called Secret of Magic, because it's her, it's the awakening of magic in the realm that has killed magic. Later in the second book, so you find out why, and there's a really good reason why magic was ended. And as she travels through the realm, she's awakening dormant magic users, dormant magical weapons, and she has this wonderful magical map that shows her everything that you would want to find. And because of that, then she's attracting every bad person in the area that wants to use her for their own means to take control of the throne. You know, want to kill off the old king and take control of the kingdom. So everybody who's interested in that is after her, which I thought was fun. And, you know, You know, and I like to write strong female characters, and I like a badass woman with a sword. And she was just a fun character and very different, just so you know, from my Dead Hearts Cadence and that.
Right.
But from that, they were very different women. And maybe you didn't feel that way, but when I was writing them, I felt they were very different. And it was sometimes tough because Taliesin can be vulnerable, really sensitive. Gets really caught up in her emotions, and sometimes it would bother me as the writer because I'm not that way, but she was.
Okay, so the root speeds were intentional. Good.
I had to let her do her thing when she got bogged down with the way she feels about Grudge and her struggle with liking him and not liking him at the same time, and then there's the wonderful reveal about who he really is. I like this book, right, because it's kind of like no one is who they really say they are, and as you go through this this trilogy, there's a slow reveal, and which is kind of magical, about who everybody is, what their motives are, what their past is, what they're really doing, and what they really want from Taliesin. And then it's really up. She's overwhelmed by all this, and then it's her discovery of whether or not she wants to make a difference in the lives of everyone else. Does she really want to bring back magic? Would she rather hide in a hole? So I liked her personal journey. So you, the reader, are on a physical journey traveling through the realm. She, as your main character, is on a personal, emotional journey, finding out who she is, where she is in the world, and is she going to make a difference? Does she want to make a difference? And how important she is. And you find out eventually that she's very vital to everything that's going on.
Nice.
Like I said, I'm not going to mention the characters because some of them we've already have. Like, you have the gypsies coming in. You know, that's Jael and Tamal and that crew. But you also have representatives, what I see as traditional, more European, medieval-type characters. Not going to mention who that is. You have another character that feels more of the area of the coast. You know, like you said, you based it around the Roman or Greek or Italy. You know, kind of, you have a character kind of feels like that. That's kind of all part of this group. You have the wizard. We've already talked about Zornok. You have another individual that comes in really, really late in this series that will probably play a hinge pin in the second book. But she's more of the traditional, what I would picture as a Wiccan. And that's
my character of Rin?
No. I was thinking more of Yasme. Isn't that?
Oh, God. She's really bad. She's really a villain.
Well, I guess I shouldn't say Wiccan. I should say more of the dark magic, because there is a distinction. There is a distinction. I apologize for that. So that was my mistake. Yes. Yeah.
Wiccan is basically, if I remember correctly, one of the versions is God's female instead of generally called
the basically, and Wiccan's more of the light magic more than the dark magic and earth magic and stuff like that. So that's my mistake. I apologize.
I barely know anything about it. But
she's more of the more traditional dark magic user. And what do you think of the Wicked Witch or, you know, stuff
not
like
Wiccan,
that?
Not Wiccan, but just witch. Right. There you go.
You do have... you did mention Rin, but yeah, that would be your Wiccan. I agree with you there now. So yeah, talking out the wrong side of my mouth there. I apologize to everybody out there.
No, I will tell you, Richard, when I'm dealing with magic, of course, and I know Zarnik says it many times, that magic is neither good or evil. It's not dark or light. It's really the individual who's using it.
Right.
So yes, ma'am. I'm doing a panel at Wizard World Austin. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a panel on villains, but one of them on the female villains, and then what makes a villain good. And so with my witch, Yasme, and with any villain, I really truly believe that they have to have a reason for why they are, you know, why they are bad, or why they are bitter, or why they're full of hate, or why they want to hurt other people. So her story, Yasme's story, when you find out, it's really rather tragic, and it's really rather sad, and you can really feel for her and know why. You can understand why she's doing the things she does, because if you were a woman scorned, and I don't want to say what happened to her, but it's really horrible what happened to her. You could see why she would do the things she does. And that's kind of like what I want to do with all the villains in this realm of magic. Everybody has a reason for doing the things that they're doing, things that you wouldn't agree with, things that my main character Taliesin certainly doesn't agree with, but they all have a reason, right? A proper motivation for being a badass or being evil or killing people or bringing harm to others, right? They're just not I don't like writing those one-dimensional villains that are just bad because they're bad people. I want to give them a reason for why doing the awful things they're doing.
True. Like, and one of the things is... the villains are great. I mean, and you want complexities, and you have one villain in there that's pretty much, I don't know his backstory. I don't know. With the next book, sounds like you might be getting into his backstory, but sorry.
Are you going to say Wolfgar?
Yes. Wolfgar
of the Wolf Clan.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the person who the last of my three questions were about.
Wolfgar? Yeah. What was your question?
Please tell me the reason he had the witch hunt excuse was for an official reason to be there.
I think it goes back to Suzanne's, and you can answer this too, Suzanne. What I felt as a reader, and then Suzanne can actually respond as the writer, is because of the whole concept of magic was being banned. So they came after Taliesin with that advent so that they would have a reason to actually say, hey, we got to come in. So
right. The Wolf Clan arrives at Raven's Nest to take Taliesin into custody based on her being a witch. Mm-hmm. They believe that she's a witch.
Yes,
that, except for the now, fact that they truly do believe she's a witch.
Huh.
That isn't really, that's partly why they're there, but they're really there to capture her, to get her to find, which the whole damn thing, every bad guy in this book wants Taliesin to find him a magical weapon, period. So anything that comes out of their mouth, anything that they have to say, all they want is to use this poor girl to find them a sword so they can go kill everyone else so they can be in power. So Captain Wolfgar is doing what his chief told him to do. Go get Taliesin, bring her back, and then they're going to use her to find magical weapons.
Which they can't.
So he's lying to the Raven Clan. Okay, there's all this protocol.
You stole something from the Wolf Clan thing that was the complete and utter lie instead.
The Wolf Clan can't just come in. Each clan has proper protocol that you're supposed to adhere to when you arrive at their headquarters. So the Wolf Clan can't just come in there and take her and leave with her. There has to be certain reasons. So everything that Wolfgar said, he just kind of said bullshit to your Raven Master to make the Raven Master crumble and do what he wanted. He thought he could intimidate the old man into giving him the girl.
Right.
Okay, that makes more sense.
And when the old man does not do what he says, then that's why he comes back later. So Wolfgar was intentionally supposed to be misleading, confusing, and make you feel uncomfortable and unsure what he was really doing there. Everything he did to the reader was pure manipulation to keep you off guard for the horrible thing that's coming.
Okay,
what the Wolf Clan does to the Raven Clan is horrible. It is absolutely horrible. And so all the things that he did was just to mess with their little bird brains.
To get back a little bit more with the Wolfgar, he's pretty ruthless, to say the least, as well. But you introduce another area within the books, which is the shape-shifting, the magical realm of shape-shifting. You bring that in with a wolfen. Like I said, we kind of mentioned this at the very beginning. You kind of held true to what we're going to be talking about werewolves when we talked last time with you. So this kind of brings that into this series as well. But then you also, and I don't know how much this is going to come into a later fact, but you have the cult of the snake, or that have basically are snake man, half snake. So you're getting into that realm where there's cross species. Whether it's magical, it has to be magical, I assume, since there's not a whole lot of technology. But you going to play with a lot more of that in the future books, or are you just kind of keeping it to where it's at right now?
Keeping to where it's at. When you in this trilogy, when you run across strange species, a lot of them are extremely ancient.
Mm-hmm.
They've either been removed from the realm, exterminated, or there's so few of them left that they're no longer a threat. And so the creatures in the cave of the snake god, they have been locked away where they can do no harm. And as you know, there's some weird stuff that's going on inside the cave where your magical sword is being kept.
And one of the things I'll have to, this is, again, showing my age to a degree. With these scenes, it harkened back, this won't be as bad, but the next one will. Reference of Indiana Jones really came sharp into mind with Raiders of the Lost Ark, with all the cobras. But then what really hit me was the first Conan movie with one despot turning into the snake. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is so reminiscent of Robert Howard and Conan and all of this. So.
You know, and I will say, my writing style gets compared to him a lot.
Okay.
But I will say, yes, all these, you must realize, and I'm older than you, so all these things heavily influenced me when I was young. So, yes, you will see all these things that you're mentioning, Richard, are in the story, and deliberately so, because they inspired me, and I love these things, so I put them into the story. Mm-hmm. And I think by now you've told that my favorite monster of all times is the werewolf. There is nothing more beautiful and terrifying at the same time. I love me some werewolves. And you know, it's funny, and they're in this trilogy, but they're different from your ordinary werewolves, and so I didn't want them to be the same. They're different, and they are the Wolfen. Okay. But you know, come on, they're badass. When you've got a guy that's stripping out of his armor to turn into a big bad wolf, you know that they're bad.
True. And we won't get too much further into that aspect because that kind of leads to spoiler stuff that kind of is interesting at the end.
Here's something fun. So Wolfgar is based on Eric Northrum from... Vampire show that was on HBO?
True Blood.
Okay. Yeah, so he's Eric Northman. And then the Gypsy King, that my Alvarez Octavia, that's Sean Connery from Highlander.
Oh, okay.
Did you get a Sean Connery, older Sean Connery feel? Yeah, that's who he is, because I love that character from Highlander. So that's the head of the gypsies.
Okay.
So see all these things I get influenced by, then I want to write about them later and disguise them in my own way.
There you go. And one of the things, and Jonathan said you might hit me for this, but that's all right. You can hit me if you want. With the dead hearts and the way Realms of Magic is written, completely two different styles to me, it feels like. I don't know if Dead Hearts really feels more of a young adult adventure type theme. It does have the horror aspects, but it feels more, you know, the horror adventure and young adult theme. And you feel that with the characters because they are basically teenagers or younger for the most part. Where this one, and this is where Jonathan said you might hit me, I enjoyed Seeker of Magic more than the Dead Hearts.
No,
I think that's because it's written for an adult audience. You're writing adult characters. I enjoyed Dead Hearts for a different reason, but this one I was able to latch on to faster and go faster with it because they're younger than me still, but you know, they're dealing with more adult situations. You have the complexities, like you mentioned, Taliesin and Grudge, their complexity with their relationship, the things that are kept secret and then revealed, and they have to deal with all these. And the writing style just feels completely different. And it's not a bad thing. I'm not saying
no, that. No. You're absolutely correct. And so here's the funny thing, and you're correct on this. So I wrote The Realm of Magic before Dead Hearts.
Okay.
And Realm of Magic was meant for adults, and then I kind of, there were some sex scenes. And when my beta readers, my publisher had their beta readers look at it, and they're like, well, we don't, these sex scenes, they're upsetting us. We're fantasy readers, and we don't need the sex. Okay, so the sex came out. So it went really from adult down to new, so it's new adults, 20-ish.
Right.
You know, your main character's 26. It's the reader's right. I have little kids are reading it. So, but I wrote it before, and the funny thing is, I don't know. I, for some reason, I thought Realm of Magic wasn't good enough. And zombies were suddenly hot. And I wrote the first five books in Dead Hearts. And then Game of Thrones came on. And I'm over. I still love The Walking Dead. But my kind of my love for The Walking Dead and went from the Game of Thrones. I go, God, I wish I could write like George R.R. Martin. Haven't I written anything like him? So then I grabbed the books. And then I started reading it. Thought, God damn it. Yeah, I've always been writing like him. I wrote like George R.R. Martin before, and then I switched to placate the zombie lovers. And so then I went back to the Seeker of Magic, the Realm of Magic, and then the Realm of Magic is my natural writing style.
Okay.
And so for Dead Hearts, when I'm writing for a younger audience, it's a swifter, faster pace. It's like playing the piano played easy. And then when I'm writing the Realm of Magic, now I've upped my game. Not that I'm playing Mozart yet, but it's more complicated piano piece. You know, that's right. The way I kind of see it. So that's why I'm sure you enjoyed it more, because I was writing more for an adult audience. And you know what? And it was tough, because I had to go back and edit The Realm of Magic
Okay.
And rewrite it as I was still writing Dead Hearts and trying to switch your brain from writing for teenagers to writing to adults and doing things at the same time. It was really tough. It was really hard. But you know, I got it done, and I think Secret of Magic and even Mistress of Magic, I think the Realm of Magic really are my better works. Okay. I think it's really good writing. I'm up for, you know, I don't like these people applying for awards and crap, and gee, I haven't heard anything, but I was up for a national award this month for Secret of Magic.
Cool.
We'll see how it goes, but I think those books are really good. Right. And I wanted to get them published out, so if people thought, well, she can only write young adult books, and she can't write anything a little bit more significant. Well, you know what? Yeah, I can. And I could even up the game more. I want to think that I can sit down and write any damn genre for any age group given the time, which okay. I think a good writer can.
Like I said, I've turned into more of the reader. The other guys have gotten busy. Logan's even getting a little bit busier, but... So I'm the fastest reader now of this whole group, and I started out as the slow reader. Go figure on that one. So that's where the tables have flipped. So, but that's all right.
Well, we'll get there. I've been busy with work and some other stuff.
So, Jonathan, did you say you've been busy with some weird stuff?
Work and some other stuff.
Okay.
But yeah, that's one of the things. More and more probably going to be me, but be the main one to read the book. So I'm getting to the point where I gotta get stuff out. Gotta get stuff out. I want to talk to people. So yeah, it's going to become more me discussing with the authors. But this is one, like I said, it was written to me for adults. I enjoyed it. I think the adult market is going to appreciate this one more because of that. I can see it, like you said, set next to, you know, the regular classical fantasy novels and series, and it's catering to completely two different audiences as well, not just age-wise but genre-wise, because some people that like the horror aspects aren't necessarily big into the fantasy, and vice versa, and some of them enjoy the crossing of genres. So this is one where I think you're going to snatch the fantasy readers so much faster. Yeah, and hey, then they'll try your other books.
You mentioned the winged horse. There's a winged horse. That makes everyone happy.
Yeah, that's true. So that's where you get your Pegasus. There you go.
Hey, and it's not a gilding, by the way. It's a stallion.
But I like how you've created the characters are strong, but yet, like you said, they're not infallible. And some writers, they'll take the characters and go so extreme that they're better than everybody else, but you've taken that middle road where they are strong in them of themselves, but they do have faults as well. And some authors tend to go to the extreme rather than the middle of the road, so it's kind of welcoming to see that, because I don't mind the extreme, but at the same time, I don't want to just have a male presence or a big female presence. You were able to blend everything together and make them equals. And still, like you said, the powerful female characters are equal to the male character. So I enjoyed that aspect.
Thanks, Richard. That's a huge compliment, by the way. And that's actually what I try to do in a book. I want the male and female genders to complement one another.
Right. So in that regards, I really enjoyed that. We basically want to mention Suzanne has the second book of this series out. It is entitled Mistress of Magic. Do you want to give a little bit of a synopsis of that, Suzanne, real fast? Or do you want to kind of keep it under wraps?
No, so in book two, Taliesin now is, she's still on her quest. She is now up far up north, and she is now in the magic realms. Okay. So everything mystical and magical is revealed in book two. Your female character becomes stronger in book two.
Okay.
And it's really fun and exciting. My publisher says book two is my best writing, the best book yet. And then the third book, Queen of Magic, will be out next month. Wow. I'm the one that delayed it a little bit, but it was supposed to be out November 14th, and I told them to slow their jets a bit. So it'll be out next month, and it's really wonderful. So then the big, strong commander like Cadence appears in the third book. She gets really tough by book three. I don't, this is how we'll wrap it up. When I write a lead character, I'm not going to write him out of the chute being strong and magnificent. They're going to earn their wings.
Right.
They are going to slowly evolve over time and into being the leader, and you're going to understand why people would respect them and why people would follow them. I won't write a strong character starting out of the gate unless it's a minor character or a B character. Mm-hmm. Your main character has got lessons to learn, because that's all part of the plot and the growing process, and why you should slowly fall in love with your main character. As they grow, you grow, and it's like a relationship you're bonding with them. Right. So I want my characters to grow up, and they start young, and they end powerful. And that's the way I like. And I like to write my villains the same damn way.
Right.
And I want them to have a strong backstory.
And you're leading up to where people can... one of the things, you're coming out with these so fast, and now I know why, because you had them previously written. So that explains that, because that was going to be one of my questions, why so fast. It's like, I can't keep up. But now I understand why, since they were previously written. It's, well, God, I just went blank. Oh, good Lord. Where was I going with? I sidetracked myself. Oh, my God.
Well, that doesn't mean that you're supposed to just because things are previously written, I still have to go back and rewrite.
Right.
I still have to bring them up to speed, bring them up to date, and add things and smooth them out. So it's still.
Right.
And I have at least 20 more books that are already written, but I would still have to go back and stroke them the same way to make them ready to go.
And I just reminded myself while you were talking, you allow foreshadowing enough. And I could be wrong in some of my theories of what could possibly be happening, but I'm like, ew, this could be interesting going this route, and I'm not going to get into those. We can do that off air and kind of have fun with that, because I don't want to, if it's right, I don't want to spoil anything. But that's what's kind of fun is with authors, you leave enough hitting to kind of give the readers a little bit of fun to say, to speculate. And say, this could happen this way, but it might not, but it would be cool to be this way. So that's kind of fun when I'm reading a book, too. And that's kind of like how I watch the movies that are in a series. You want a little bit of a setup and let people speculate a little bit so that they have some investment in it that way as well. But we want to make everybody be sure to check out either Suzanne's website. You can look up SuzanneLandham.com. She also has another website, DeadHeartsNovels.com, if I remember right. You can find her Dead Hearts
Novels. And I do, there. And I have the RealmOfMagic.com, but there is a hyphen between each word. But the Realm of Magic is a really cool website, and it's got a really neat interactive map. And really gets into all the characters, because I do tend to write a lot of characters, but it really gets into their backgrounds, and that's fun, too. It's visually pleasing.
I'll have to mark that down. I didn't realize you created one for this series as well.
I do. So, yeah, the Realm of Magic, but hyphen between each word.
Everybody out there, if you're looking for a good fantasy series to check out, be sure to check out Seeker of Magic and Mistress of Magic. That is book one and book two of the Realm of Magic series. And she mentioned Queen of Magic is going to be forthcoming shortly, so be prepared for that as well. They are all being published under the Chris Kennedy Publishing or Theogen Books, so be sure to check that out. She does have her websites, like I mentioned, and she also mentioned the RealmOfMagic.com with hyphens in between each word, but we'll have links to all of those as well on the show notes, so be sure to check those out as well. You'll be sure to have fun with those, and when you check out those, be sure to check out our Dead Hearts novels. You might enjoy those as well. Check it out. She's a fun person to speak with and have fun with. Thank you, as always, Suzanne. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Delighted.
We hope you guys have been having fun out there. We definitely have. We'll catch everybody on the flip side. Bye now.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye. I could see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye to my thing.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.